my recommendation overall, you know, if you want to build real influence, to get the buy-in, to do anything, in fact, you know, it's not just experimentation, always build a story. I think storytelling for product managers, so I mean, people talk about it, but I don't think people give enough importance to it. People feel like, you know, you can wing it. It's a skill that you need to develop over a period of time. And data-backed storytelling, very few people can argue with that.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Experiment Nation, where we interview the world's top experts on conversion rate optimization, experimentation, and growth to share their strategies and tactics. I'm Khalil Gulivala, and today we have Priya Bhatia with us. Priya, introduce yourself.
Yeah, for sure. Hi, Khalil, and hello, everybody watching this. I'm Priya Bhatia. I am the Growth PM lead at Seven Shifts. Seven Shifts is a restaurant B2B team management software. We are a C2C company based in Canada. But yeah, obviously, we have operations across North America. We serve restaurants, about a million users now, which feels so surreal, users in North America. Yeah, that's pretty much what I do right now. In the past, I have been a part of the finance industry, actually, which is interesting if you want to know more. But yeah, transitioned to becoming a product manager about four and a half years ago.
Yeah, amazing. Definitely, I think we'd love to talk about the transition because I think there's a lot of that going on. But what I maybe love to start with is, you know, is the fact that a lot of people who are working in sort of experimentation, conversion rate optimization is sort of it's about the soft skills. You know, the idea is, you know, how do you get that experiment engine going when you don't have buy-in within the organization? Could you share some of your findings and experience on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's such an interesting question. Honestly, very few people talk about this. So I really like that you're asking me this. A lot of things that you do, you know, in experimentation, again, I always say this, experiment is just a tool to get to the user psychology, to get to closer to the truth, which is the user psychology. How do you do that, though? Because I've spoken to so many product managers who struggle with just like, I think end of the day, it comes down to influence of, you know, how much influence you have as a product manager in your organization. But how do you even create that influence? How do you get the buy-in? And what are the soft skills that are required for that? A couple of things that checked out for me were obviously creating this vision, a little bit of a vision of, you know, what is it that I'm trying to do? What is the problem statement? Trying to back it up with data of, you know, this is where we are seeing drop-offs. This is where our funnel metrics are not working well. And creating a story around it. And, you know, maybe using Hotjar to kind of convey that user story as well, that, you know, this is where your customers or users find it difficult to get over a certain step. Things like that, which helped me build very early validation. I tested very small things in the beginning. Did very quick A/B test, which kind of proved value in, you know, testing some of these things, those small wins kind of helped me gain the buy-in to experiment with the larger bets, and, you know, down the funnel, where we now we are focusing more and more on doing more like pricing and monetization tests. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a journey overall. My recommendation overall, you know, if you want to build real influence, to get the buy-in, to do anything, in fact, you know, it's not just experimentation, always build a story. I think storytelling for product managers, people talk about it, but I don't think people give enough importance to it. People feel like, you know, you can wing it. It's a skill that you need to develop over a period of time. And data-backed storytelling, very few people can argue with that. So I would highly encourage, you know, people to build that muscle. And it's an ongoing exercise, always a work in progress, but work on that. I think that is what will help you build influence in the organization. The second piece also is just like, yes, you have the story, but then again, presenting it to the right audience, you know, find the right people, right stakeholders to kind of voice your opinions about a certain, for example, a solution. You know, you don't think that a solution is the most appropriate thing. I think talk to people and communicating that often is also very, very important. One thing that I do now, which kind of helps me get the buy-in for anything I want to do, which is like I have these big ideas sometimes that I want to feel, where I feel like, you know, I need the organization to sit up and take notice. And, you know, because I want the buy-in from all the different departments, it's just not Prada. Like, growth cannot be done in a vacuum, right? You have to have the buy-in of sales, marketing, you know, product teams, so customer-facing teams. So how do you get that buy-in? What I tend to do now is, if I cannot pull everybody into a room, I'll create a deck. I'll literally just create a deck, a proposal. But the proposal is still talking about the same thing, the story that I'm trying to convey, that, look, this is what the problem is. This is our goal for the quarter or for the year. This is the data. This is what we are doing wrong right now. Our competition is doing this. And if we did so and so improvements in the product, or we did some experiments, you know, these are the results that we can expect. So just broadly carving out that story is again, very important. Yeah, I'm happy to kind of dive into some of these areas.
Yeah, I'd say so. I think on one hand, what it is about having data-backed storytelling. And I think if what I love to maybe dig more is sort of the idea of a deck, you know, because sometimes, you know, when you try to pull, you know, just organizing a meeting is hard. When you organize different departments and people, that can even get so troublesome. That's something which even Doodle can't solve. If you're trying to influence somebody, right, the idea is that, you know, like, for example, like if you got the idea together, can you talk more about sort of the tactics to present, the tactics to influence? Like if you're someone in a new organization, they may not even have a clear sense of what experimentation is. So how do you go from a point where, you know, you're dealing with general level of people not knowing about the job, the description, to a place where you've got that buy-in?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question again, and something, you know, this is a work in progress, honestly. Like, this takes me back to 2 years ago when I did not have the title of growth, Kalil. I just, you know, I joined as a core PM at Seven Shifts. I did not even know what growth meant back then. What happened is I was kind of tasked to build a certain feature. And then I have always been, because of my past career in banking, investment banking, just very, very data inclined, just naturally. And I used to ask these questions, or just being very, very curious about, like, okay, why are we working on a certain feature where I can see that the funnel is impacted in so-and-so way? Like, there are bigger opportunities there. I can see this clear drop-off in these, like, basic customer, you know, experience. Why am I shipping a new feature? Those used to be my questions. One day, me and my designer kind of got together, and we kind of sneakily ran this test without actually getting a real buy-in. And we decided to, it was a very small thing, and the test won. It was an A-B test, and the variant was successful. And that's when I kind of brought it back to my leadership. And I told them, like, we ran this test, this paywall works better, you know, so and so forth. And that's the time we were actually raising a Series B. I think we had raised a Series B, and we were setting up a growth team. And because I had shown that curiosity of, you know, around data, around being more experimental in my approach, I feel like, you know, it was a natural fit as well. And so when my, you know, current VP, then product director, asked me, Priya, do you want to do growth? It's like, I don't know what that is, but, you know, I'll figure it out. Well, let's see what it is. So my recommendation again is, if you don't have the title of growth, or, you know, you're not in charge of experimentation, you need to build that confidence as well in your leadership, right? Like, do those small things, experiment very quickly. You don't have to do a very big test to prove something, that something works. You just need to prove that this concept of experimentation works. Like, you can get closer to the user psychology by using an experimental approach. And anybody can do that. Like, any product manager, you don't need to have the title as well. Like, do that so that you get the buy-in. It's not the other way around. Like, you should not be entrusted to do experimentation and then you go and figure out what experiments to run. I hope that's making sense, or at least it's helping.
It is. And I think kind of you segue in the next kind of topic, which is how experimentation isn't growth. Now, you've been pretty vocal about this. Could you tell our audience about more of your thoughts on that?
This is Romo Santiago from Experiment Nation. Every week, we share interviews with and conference sessions by our favorite conversion rate optimizers from around the world. So if you like this video, smash that like button and consider subscribing. It helps us a bunch. Now back to the episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Being pretty vocal about it. And it's honestly, I don't think it's even a hot take. It's just that, you know, I get a lot of people asking me, I want to do growth. Can you tell me what experiments to run? I'm like, well, what do you want to learn? Why do you want to run an experiment? What do you want to do? So that's the part of my frustration, and that's why I wrote that article as well. Like, you know, growth is not equal to experimentation. When you're talking about growth, you have to be very, very clear on the goal. Like, what are you trying to learn? Why do you even want to, you know, grow? And under growth, there could be multiple things that you can do. Like in the PL, if you're talking explicitly about the PLG framework, then it's, you know, how do you acquire? How do you retain? How do you monetize? Like those are the three big levers. So what are you going to do? What lever do you want to pull to grow? Right? That has to be extremely clear. And then once you've done that, can you clearly identify in your funnel where are those drop-off points? Can you qualitatively, quantitatively identify what those drop-off points are? If you do not have a strong even data infrastructure to tell where you're lacking growth or where you're actually where there are opportunities for growth, it doesn't matter what experiment you run, you will not be able to tell its impact, right? Because you don't know what you're trying to grow. That's why that was the whole goal of writing that article. And so a few steps are very, very key for me in order to say that, you know, let's run an experiment. You have to be extremely clear about what is the goal. What are you trying to learn about the user? What is the current state in terms of qualitative and quantitative data? I always like to back it up with like just some user testing, or, you know, a Hotjar video, or talking to even customer or support or customer facing team to identify if this is a real problem and it's not just a data thing. So just kind of validating that as well, qualitatively and quantitatively. And then, you know, trying to do something really small to run an experiment to test that whether, okay, this hypothesis, now you have a hypothesis that a customer is not taking a certain action or they're not clicking on a certain CTA because of so-and-so thing. Now let's go and test it. And then again, the one thing that keeps getting just kind of, forgotten when we are running an experiment, setting up success metrics. So many people, they run the experiment and then they, at the end of the experiment, they kind of take a call based on, okay, something is happening and then, you know, this is success for us. You need to measure this. You need to be clear on what your success metric is before you run an experiment. That is an experiment. So the experiment is literally a tool to get to what your goal was, which was, you know, you wanted to learn something about the user. But yeah, that's my take on growth not being equal to experimentation.
You know, I think sort of one of the things I'd be interested to know about is that you're talking about success matrix and you're talking about your previous background in investment banking. So I'd love to know a bit sort of about that transition. But maybe before we get into that, I'd love to know sort of, because you've got a banking background, you know, what should be the financial metrics that experimenters and growth marketing should focus on?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. So I would say what I take back from, from my past career is mostly just thinking in ROI terms, like just return on investment in whatever we do, right? So in those terms, I think growth is very, very similar to how I used to think back then as well. Like we used to work on transactions and, you know, used to look at rate of returns and things like that. So that's kind of how I'm wired to think. So whenever now I'm trying to prioritize an experiment, I'm always thinking about the highest ROI bet. What initiative can give me a very high return on the effort that is invested. So that's, I think, the biggest concept I carry from my finance background. But like, just in terms of financial metrics in growth, a few metrics that I definitely look on, not a weekly basis as well, but just like a monthly basis maybe, is definitely CAC payback. Those are the metrics that kind of help me, again, craft a story around, you know, why should we get more and more efficient around acquiring more customers, and how do we acquire more customers? How do we activate them? How do we do that more in a product-led way? So I think those would be the financial metrics. Apart from that, I think if you ask me what metrics I'm like tracking on a weekly or maybe daily basis as well, is mostly just trial to paid conversion. How our onboarding completion is, how our activation rate is for the newer cohorts, and maybe ARPU as well, ARPU and ARPL, which is average revenue per trial and average revenue per user. Those are the metrics that we track as well.
Great. All right, Priya, so question for you. So, like, you know, if you're starting with growth in your organization, and you're trying to get things off either through a free plan, trial, or something else, how would you go about it? What would you recommend?
Yeah, very interesting. And to be honest, it kind of depends on the size of the organization. Why I say size is because, or size or stage of the organization, why I say that is because it's directly kind of related to how much, you know, how much resources you can expend on this growth thing. And then, you know, because it is also stage driven, it's very important to identify what is your biggest goal with growth, right? So for example, I don't know if slapping a free trial or a freemium model is the right answer. So for example, if your product still doesn't have good retention, which is the kind of table stakes to even think about growth, but for example, you are a person in an organization where you feel like, you know, we do not have a solid product that kind of retains very well. You need to focus on retention. If your product, you know, doesn't have a self-serve kind of conversion journey, right? Like if you are getting into that self-serve motion, then you need to think about how can a user who has experienced the value, how can they check out really easily, really, really quickly without having to reach out to a customer support representative. So it again comes down to what is the goal. Always the first step to even, you know, identifying that goal is to have a very strong data infrastructure. So are you really measuring your, you know, just top of the funnel, how you acquire customers, what percentage of customers are you able to retain and how many actually convert? If you're able to even build that journey for yourself and have data, you know, kind of tracking these metrics really, really well, that's a good place to start as well. You don't need to like just come in and ship things. It's not necessary. So first create that just a common, I always say metrics is a common common language that, you know, teams can talk about. So metrics kind of help you unite with marketing and sales teams as well. So, and those are very important things, right? Like growth is not just PLG, which is like kind of another thing that it's kind of conflated with. Growth was always there in the past as well when PLG did not exist. So again, identify what's your goal of growth. So having set up that, just kind of completing that, you know, what you need to do. So one is get your data infrastructure in place, track those metrics, identify where there are drop-off points. Like, are you acquiring enough leads? If you're not, then you need to do a better job of acquiring your users. If you do it in a product-led way, or whether you spend more marketing resources, you do more paid ads, whatever channels work for you, you need to focus on acquisition there. If you think you're able to acquire really, really well, but you know, customers do not you know, convert from your pricing page, you need to work on your pricing. You know, compare yourself with your competitors, because at any point a customer is trying to purchase your product, they are comparing your pricing to another competitor's pricing. So even though your product is doing a good job of just acquiring, activating, if the price point doesn't, the perceived value, you know, the price point doesn't make sense in terms of perceived value, they're not going to convert. So these are like the low-hanging fruits I suggest, you know, growth professionals to go through, like go through this exercise, and then identify which is the biggest lever that you can move in order to, I think the growth goal overall remains the same, right? It's revenue or user growth. So what is the biggest lever then that you can work on that will help you move the output metric?
Yeah, something there that you mentioned, Priya. So at this point, we've seen people conflate experimentation with growth, which you mentioned also might conflate product-led, you know, PLG product-led growth with experiment growth. Forgive me. Could you talk a little bit about what makes them different?
Yeah, I don't think this is, it's different. It's a layer or a newer just concept as well. Like, in the past, the way things worked, the way software was sold was primarily through just the sales teams, right? So there was just a very heavy reliance or a very tight partnership between marketing and sales leaders or sales department, where, you know, the marketing team would just kind of go out and market the product and then pass those leads on to the sales teams. Now, as the industry has gotten too crowded, like every category has so many products out there, the power has kind of shifted to the users, right? Like, and that happened because there were some products that were offering try before you buy, right? Like, typical, like, when was the last time like you talked to a salesperson to buy something, right? So that's how users like to buy today. So that's why, like, the power has kind of shifted to the users, and therefore this product-led growth as a concept came into picture, where like the product itself was responsible, or you know, was creating that the lead funnel or driving the usage, and then now the sales teams go after those leads because they know there's high intent and they are better off now going after those leads who have experienced the value of the product, because it saves them time and energy. It makes them much more efficient. They don't have to explain. They don't have to spend the time and, you know, take people out for lunches and dinners to kind of make that sale, because the product is doing that. So it's still like the conceptually, I think the idea is still the same, that you need to sell your software, but how you do that is just kind of the power has kind of shifted to now the users of the product. Product usage takes precedence over just, you know, marketing and marketing qualified leads. But yeah, like conceptually, I think I still believe growth is still the same.
And I guess when you're going back to your sort of your previous role in investment banking, what made you switch sectors?
Yeah, I think overall, and now, back then, I did not know this is kind of called growth mindset, but I think it goes back to just on a personal journey as well. I think I've always had this mindset of trying multiple things. I would pretty much call myself a generalist and not, you know, somebody who likes to kind of niche down in one particular area. And that's just been me. That's been my temperament overall across my life. So again, growing up in India, maybe you know this as well, which is the playbook is kind of written for us, right? Like you get your engineering degree, you get an MBA, and then, you know, you find a job, the highest paying job in the finance industry, which is what I did. I started as a consultant, and then went to investment banking and then eventually private equity, but kind of hit a wall. Like I was like, this, all of these kind of check boxes are done for me. What is next? So that's also the time I got an opportunity to move to Canada. And I was close to the tech sector a little bit because the investments that we used to do was in tech industry. So I knew about this field. I was just kind of looking for something new to do and where my skills would kind of find, you know, would be a little bit transferable as well. And I would really enjoy doing something. Again, how I made the transition was, again, very, very experimental, which is I took up a role in a very small seed stage company. And I wanted to just kind of understand the ropes of working in a proper, you know, tech company. And yeah, because it was such a small company, I got to wear a lot of hats. It was doing user research, it was experimenting, doing a lot of things, you know, just building the product as well. And overall, just fell in love with the craft, right? Like I had the opportunity to learn in real time from what the customer was expecting and build it and then kind of share it with them and get the feedback. To me, that was like the feedback loop was so quick. And that is something that I kind of got me hooked on this journey, that, you know, okay, I can see the reward of my effort so quickly, right? If you're working in an agile fashion, you know, you could experiment, get that feedback so quickly. Whereas when you were working on some transactions, I've worked on transactions which used to be like 6 months, 1 year, and if it materialized, it would give you some return. So that's why I was like, yeah, okay, I need to be in a much more fast-paced world, and that's why I kind of made that transition eventually.
Yeah, it's not often people talk about the fast pace, you know, going from, you know, not finding investment banking fast-paced enough, but I think what you talk about is the speed of it. You know, it can take months versus growth, where it's like by the second you can look at stuff.
Exactly.
Something you mentioned, I would love to know. So you talk about how you're a generalist, how you experiment, right? How even in some sense, your journey into experimentation was an experiment in itself. Have you ever applied experimentation tactics to like your personal life?
I feel like I do that all the time in my personal life. Like I said, you know, with product management as well, like again, growth is not something I knew before. I joined this company as well as a product manager, and how I got to product management is how I told you, like I literally just started in a very, very small role in a very small company. I think the company was only 10 to 12, 15 people max. So that's that was a part of my experiment, like professionally. But personally, I would say I just kind of dabble a lot into how, you know, what I enjoy doing in terms of like my health journey. So I'll experiment all the time with how, what I eat, you know, intermittent fasting, cold showers, all the things that you kind of hear in the public domain. I try to learn, try to see if it works for me, take what works for me, some things that don't work for me, just kind of leave it. So yeah, that's how I experiment in my personal life. How about yourself? What would be your answer to this?
I'm actually a very introverted person by nature, and actually I grew up with a speech impediment, so I just stutter.
Yeah.
And so I one day said, I don't want to live this life being quiet. I want to learn. So I would literally just go in, I would just say hi to a stranger, and I would go and order, and I would just keep one thing at a time, and I would look at what words stop me, what sounds I stutter on P's. And so I would use these small stuff to a point where I was like, you know, I'm just like one incremental step at a time.
Yeah.
And here's where I am right now. So that to me was just, I was interested. I was like, I wonder if people are, you know, like, I think it's a mindset that we have at work, but then we turn it on ourselves. It can be so much more enriching. Right?
Absolutely.
Because opening life for ourselves.
Yeah. Now that you're saying that, I think, Khalil, I can tell you, like, even this podcast is, or writing on Substack and just my LinkedIn journey as well, where you found me, is also part of an experiment, right? Like I would call myself an introvert too, but I understood, you know, talking to other PMs when people used to reach out to me, that there is genuinely a lack of just, you know, knowledge, and you know, there's some gaps in this industry, and there's just a lot of bad advice. It was just a little itch that I wanted to scratch, and then I did not know how I'm going to do this. And LinkedIn was available to me, Substack was available to me, and it's a part of just that experiment too, right? Like, does this work? I think it's working. I need to do more of that. But yeah, I think this is also part of that experiment of how I get myself out there, not only for myself, but just like how I spread that knowledge to people who don't have it today.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Priya. I think that's just so incredible. So I noticed that, you know, you've got this amazing, you know, a Substack page where you're putting articles. Can you tell maybe our listeners, like, you know, if they want to follow you or learn more about your ideas, what are the different places they can find you and find your content?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I mentioned, LinkedIn and Substack is a great place. And I tend to answer questions on LinkedIn as well. Like, you know, if you have a question on growth, I am very much happy to answer them. So feel free to like send a message as well, and I'll be happy to take it.
Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, Priya, and for being here today.
Yeah, for sure.